Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is side one of For the Record program number 583, Update on Islamic Fascism. This program is being recorded on January 28th of the year 2007. First of all, I want to offer a qualified apology. I am currently afflicted with a bug that's going around, so I'm less than 100%. If I sound kind of subpar, it's because I am. I've got a cold, but I think the broadcast will be able to be pulled off nonetheless. But if I sound like I'm underwater, there's a reason for that. What we're going to do, as the title of the program explains, is we're going to update the subject of Islamic fascism, and in particular, September 11th. One of the things that should be stressed about the subject of Islamic fascism is that one cannot separate the subject of Islamic fascism from the subject of global fascism or international fascism as a whole, because indeed, one of the things that empowers, one of the things that enables Islamic fascism, a very real phenomenon, is the fact that it is and always has been part of the fascist international. Indeed, if time permits, perhaps later on in this broadcast, I will reread an article that I included in For the Record program number 560 about how the Islamists and the Muslim Brotherhood in particular, the Muslim Brotherhood is an Islamic fascist organization dating to the World War II era fascism, and it is the parent organization of, among other institutions, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and Palestinian Islamic Jihad. But the Muslim Brotherhood is being seen by the multinational corporations and their advocates as a vehicle for effecting globalization and privatization around the world, in particular in the Third World. Islamic fascism is not an aberration, and they are not some sort of alternative resistance group. There are some very sick elements in the so-called progressive sector, a lot of them really, that see the Islamists somehow as some sort of resistance force to multinational corporatism, but boy, are they wrong. Literally nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the Muslim Brotherhood, whose economic agenda is described in, among other programs, For the Record 455, the Muslim Brotherhood has a corporatist economic philosophy that is that has endeared itself to the multinational corporate community. Again, time permitting, we'll go into that. I want to stress to listeners, too, that among the many and rapidly growing assets on the Spitfire website and the many linked websites is Miscellaneous Archive Show M42. That's called Uncle Sam and Il Duce, American Support for Mussolini and the Mythology of the Corporate State. That broadcast was recorded in February of 1990, and it discusses the comparisons between the economy that emerged in this country under Ronald Reagan and Mussolini's corporate state, as described by George Seldes in two of his works, Can These Things Be? And that was from 1931, and Sawdust Caesar from 1935. It's a very important broadcast. It's a long one. It is available now on the Spitfire website for download for free. So, if there are people who are not aware of what classical fascism is, there's a very good way to familiarize yourself with it. But again, as we go into the subject of Islamic fascism, be aware that not only is that real, because unfortunately when George Bush says talks about Islamic fascism, people go, oh, that couldn't be true. If George Bush said 2 plus 2 equals 4, that doesn't mean it equals 5, and it doesn't mean you're a fan of George Bush if you say so. But the fact of the matter is, Islamic fascism is real. It can only be understood in terms of its inextricable relationship with the fascist international through the decades, and as we will touch on in this broadcast, among the many, many evidentiary tributaries that run from the epicenters of Islamic fascism are some very strong ones running in the direction of the Republican Party and the Bush administration itself. We're going to begin by rereading a section from a New York Times article. Now, I accessed part of this article in For the Record program number 558 from 2006. And by the way, this article is available in its entirety in the For the Record supplemental section. A very enterprising and skilled listener has undertaken to put together a blog spot of the For the Record shows, and there's a supplemental section, a For the Record supplemental, which has some of the key articles that I use on these broadcasts, and this one is one of those. This is from the New York Times of June 6th. It's datelined Washington, headlined, CIA Knew Where Eichmann Was Hiding, Documents Show. It's authored by Scott Shane. That guy's last name is S-H-A-N-E. Now, the information about the CIA knowing where Eichmann was hiding came out when a bunch of federal documents were declassified by the National Archives. And we're going to read a section of that. We covered Eichmann in For the Record 558. We're going to be taking a look at somebody different here, a guy named Cherim Subsikov. But first, skipping down, the Eichmann papers are among 27,000 newly declassified pages released by the CIA to the National Archives under congressional pressure to make public files about former officials of Hitler's regime later used as American agents. The material reinforces the view that most former Nazis gave American intelligence little of value and in some cases proved to be damaging double agents for the Soviet KGB, according to historians and members of the government panel that has worked to open the long secret files. What isn't mentioned here is that they were actually working as a Trojan horse. They were working as agents to subvert the United States and doing so as agents of an underground Reich. Now, skipping down, one of the things that also was contained in these documents is information about one of these many SS Nazis who was brought in by the CIA, and this is a guy named Cherim Subsikov. The names sometimes are spelled differently depending on the transliteration. This spelling is T-S-C-H-E-R-I-M, and his last name is S-O-O-B-Z-O-K-O-V. There's an entire chapter, or the better part of one, in the book Wanted: The Search for Nazis in America by Howard Blum. This book, that book was published in hardcover and softcover in 76 and 77, and there's the better part of an entire chapter about Cherim Subsikov. Of Mr. Subsikov and what was revealed about him in these documents. The documents also provide new information about the case of Cherim Subsikov, a former SS officer who was the subject of a much-publicized deportation case in 1979 when he was living as an ordinary citizen in Paterson, New Jersey. He was charged with having falsified his immigration application to conceal his SS service, which ordinarily would have barred his entry. But the charge was dropped when a CIA document turned up showing he had disclosed his SS membership. The newly declassified records show that he was employed by the CIA from 1952 to 1959 despite, quote, clear evidence of a war crimes record, unquote, said another historian at the briefing, Richard Brightman of American University. Because it valued Mr. Subsikov for his language skills and ties to fellow ethnic Circassians living in the Soviet Union, the CIA deliberately hid details of his Nazi record from the Immigration and Naturalization Service after he moved to the United States in 1955, Mr. Brightman said. Mr. Subsikov ultimately did not escape his past. He died in 1985 after a pipe bomb exploded outside his house. The case has never been solved. Well, Subsikov, by the way, it's not mentioned here, he was indeed an SS officer. What he served in was the Turkestan Legion. That was an SS formation that was put together by the Grand Mufti, Haj Amin al-Husseini, himself an SS officer, and also, not incidentally, the first leader of the Palestinian National Movement. Yasser Arafat was his protege, and according to some sources, a distant relative, and one of the things that played a primary role in the resuscitation of Islamic fascism was the Cold War, when elements in the West, particularly British intelligence and above all the CIA, utilized the fascist Muslim Brotherhood and the residua of the Grand Mufti's milieu, many, many SS units, in order to fight the Cold War. First of all, the Muslim Brotherhood was used against communists in Muslim countries, and in particular people like Subsikov and others were utilized in order to basically function as operatives either within or in connection with the large Muslim population of the former Soviet Union. Now, as indicated in this article, Subsikov worked for the CIA. This was known. They basically let him stay in the country despite his background. And as indicated in that article, he died in the explosion of a pipe bomb in 1985, and the case has never been solved. Even though Supsakov himself was killed, we're going to take a look at a doozy article here, which indicates that the line of Supsakov, so to speak, the house of Supsakov, did not, unfortunately, die with Cherim Supsakov. This is a doozy of an article, and I'm not sure that the magazine that published this is fully aware of the significance of it. It comes from an extremely conservative publication. That is frontpagemagazine.com. It's put out by David Horowitz. They do have some decent articles about Islamic fascism, though. And in this particular article, they have identified a very interesting phenomenon, and I'm not sure. They know something's wrong, but I'm not sure they fully appreciate just how much and how far. By the way, we're going to be touching yet again on the subject of fascism and religion. Obviously, we're talking about Islamic fascism. We are also going to be talking about some support given to an Islamic fascist organization, a Hamas front organization called Islamic Relief in the United States, by the Church of the Latter-day Saints, the Mormons. I don't want to be misunderstood here as characterizing the Mormons as fascist any more than in a discussion with of fascist elements in any other religion. Do I want to be accused of accusing that religion of being fascist? But there are fascist elements in most religions, and one of the things that I've spoken about in connection with the Underground Reich is that it is a virtual state, a state without formal geographical boundaries. And one of the areas in which that is most visible is the way in which fascist elements within various religions have cooperated. This article, again, by a very conservative publication, or published by a very conservative publication, frontpagemagazine.com, is by Debbie Schlussel, S-C-H-L-U-S-S-E-L. It's dateline September 4th, 2006, and headlined, "Mormons Financing Terrorism?" It reads, "Mormons are among the most patriotic Americans. So why are they the new financiers of Islamic terrorism and instruction for young children in beheadings? The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon Church, is the single largest donor to the U.S. branch of Islamic Relief Worldwide, or IRW, also known as Islamic Relief. In the past year, it donated $1.6 million to the charity. But Islamic Relief is not just any charity. The Israeli government says it is a Hamas front group. It is also under investigation by the American government. IRW was founded in 1984 by Dr. Hani Elbana. He's a relative of Hassan Elbana, the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood terrorist group from which Hamas, Yasser Arafat, and Al-Qaeda's second-in-command, Ayman al-Zawahiri, emanated. Parenthetically, Osama bin Laden himself was tutored by the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad are offshoots of that group. Continuing, in May, Israel deported Ayaz Ali, IRW's chief of operations in Gaza, after 3 weeks in jail. Israel said Ali gave money to Hamas and Al-Wafa and Al-Salah, both outlawed by Israel for laundering money to Hamas. He also stored images of Osama bin Laden, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, senior German Nazi officials, Nazi swastikas, and a God Bless Hitler banner on his computer. Upon Ali's deportation, an Israeli government statement said, he also admitted that he worked in Jordan and cooperated with local Hamas operatives. Incriminating files were found on Ali's computer, including documents that attested to Islamic Relief's ties with illegal Hamas funds abroad, in the UK and in Saudi Arabia, and in Nablus. The IRW's activities in Judea, Samaria, and the Gaza Strip are carried out by social welfare organizations controlled and staffed by Hamas operatives. The intensive activities of these associations are designed to further Hamas's ideology among the Palestinian population. These associations' educational and religious institutions incite against the State of Israel and advocate terrorist actions against it and its citizens. In 1999, IRW's British headquarters received $50,000 from a Canadian group that the Treasury Department says is a bin Laden front, according to the Los Angeles Times. And pay very close attention to who is the registered agent for IRW in the United States. Investigator Bill Warner notes that IRW's registered agent in the United States, Kazbek Subzakov, is the son of Nazi Waffen-SS officer Cherim Subzikov and was the lawyer for deported accused terrorist and Islamic cleric Imam Waghdi Mohammed Ghonaim. Regarding Ghonaim, Immigration and Customs Enforcement official Bill Odenkrantz said, frankly, our task is not to sit around and wait for people to blow up buildings, unquote. At an Islamic Relief fundraiser I attended last Friday, Mizbah Shahid, the organization's Detroit representative, announced that IRW publishes and distributes school textbooks to children in Palestinian refugee camps. But textbooks distributed in the camps are riddled with anti-Semitic, anti-Christian, and anti-American rhetoric, according to Molly Resnick of Mothers Against Teaching Children to Kill and Hate. Shahid also told the audience that his organization is one of the key non-governmental organizations currently distributing aid to Palestinian refugee camps in Lebanon, including UN and USAID. But those camps are known as breeding grounds for terrorists. Given all this, why are Mormons pouring millions into Islamic Relief? They aren't alone. Islamic Relief's brochures show Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour accepting Katrina aid from IRW last year. It is a consultative member of the UN. It was founded in Britain with the continued financial aid and assistance of the British government, whose ambassador to Israel convinced the Israeli government to allow Islamic Relief to open its Hamas-friendly Gaza office. Almost 5 years after 9/11, we will never end terrorism if the West continues to sanction its funding. Well, one of the things that Ms. Schlussel has taken note of here is that, as I've said, Islamic fascism does not exist in a vacuum. It exists in connection with other powerful institutions, including and especially other fascist institutions. I would note, beginning with the very end there, that the Muslim Brotherhood in its immediate post-World War II incarnation was used by British intelligence in an attempt to squash Israel, and then for anti-communist purposes, and ultimately it was seconded, basically turned over to the CIA. And I would note here that the registered agent for IRW, a Hamas front organization, is Kazbek Subzikov, the son of Cherim Subzikov, the Waffen-SS officer whose bio we touched on in that very first article from the New York Times from June of 2006. Again, as indicated here, Hamas, one of the offshoots of the fascist Muslim Brotherhood, Palestinian Islamic Jihad is another. They retain much of their Nazi symbology and ceremonial behavior. Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad both use the Nazi salute, as befits their fascist orientation and pro-Nazi history. And in this case, we have a chip off the old Subzikov, so to speak. We have Kazbek Subzikov, son of Cherim Subzikov, as the registered agent for IRW in the United States. I would note here that Haley Barbour accepted aid from IRW in order to help rebuild from Katrina. He may not have done that for sinister purposes. Certainly any aid that the Gulf Coast needed in the wake of Katrina was to be utilized if possible. Nonetheless, in the case of Haley Barbour, this is not by any means the first time or an isolated context in which he has played ball with elements associated with the fascist Muslim Brotherhood. As we've looked at in a number of programs, I will have the citations for those in the written description for this broadcast. As we've looked at in a number of programs, the business outfit that was headed up by Haley Barbour, New Bridge Strategies, and an outfit that was deeply involved in the hugely corrupt pork that was allocated to, quote, rebuilding, unquote, Iraq after the initial invasion, note my use of quotes, one of the companies that Haley Barbour's New Bridge Strategies utilized in Iraq was Albunia. This, in turn, was associated with a group of companies headed up by Ahmed Idris Nasruddin and Youssef Nada of the Bank al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood. By the way, Bechtel also has subcontracted with Nada Nasruddin companies in Iraq as well. I would also note here, in addition to Haley Barbour's situation vis-a-vis IRW and also his previous use of an Al-Taqwa, or not a Nasruddin company in Iraq. I would also point out that the Mormon Church itself, and again, I do not want to be misunderstood as characterizing the Mormons as fascist, but a lot of the Mormon political leadership is deeply identified with some of the most reactionary elements in the Republican Party. And there's a book, by the way, I've never used it on the air. It's called Hidden Power, and it's about the Mormon infrastructure and just how deeply embedded they are, not only in major corporations, but also the Republican Party. Howard Hughes used Mormons in his organization because of the fact that they didn't drink or smoke or gamble. Well, basically, they didn't smoke or drink, so he felt they would be trustworthy. Something I would note, too, about the Church of the Latter-day Saints, and again, please don't bother me saying that I said the Church of the Latter-day Saints was fascist. It isn't. But, as is the case with most major religions, it appears that there is some fascist. There may very well be some fascist elements, and it's certainly some are ultra-reactionary. The Mormon Church maintains a huge computerized genealogical database which purports to trace the heritage of every human being on Earth. That, by the way, that database would certainly be something that the Underground Reich would want to make use of, because indeed they were very concerned. The Third Reich was very concerned with people's genealogies and heritage so that they could raise up purebred, quote, Aryans, unquote. One of the questions I've long had is whether that genealogical computer database maintained by the Church of Latter-day Saints might be utilized by the Underground Reich. Certainly, a fascinating article here, and it would appear that although Front Page is aware of something very serious here, they're not quite sure how the pieces of the whole fit together. But a very, very interesting article indeed. And again, it highlights how Islamic fascism can only be truly understood in the context of the global fascist international. One of the primary elements that we've looked at in connection with Islamic fascism is the Bank al-Taqwa, the chief financial organ of the Muslim Brotherhood. Bank al-Taqwa finances Hamas, an Islamic fascist organization. They have also helped to finance Palestinian Islamic Jihad, another Islamic fascist organization, and also al-Qaeda. In particular, al-Qaeda has been, according to Treasury Department documents, the beneficiary of a special account that was maintained in the Bank al-Taqwa by a guy named Ali bin Musalim. This first became public in a letter in 2002 from a Treasury Department official to the Swiss authorities when they were trying to investigate the Bank al-Taqwa. By the way, the Bank al-Taqwa was headed up by Youssef Nada, a former Nazi spy. The Bank al-Taqwa and Youssef Nada also had the most profound connections to the U.S. Nada and also Ali Galeb Himat fathered something like five children between them in the United States in 1979 and 1980. They were in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. They were probably here as an educated guess in order to work in conjunction with the Afghan Mujahideen, the MAK, another Muslim Brotherhood offshoot. About a month after the letter from a Treasury official named O'Toole to the Swiss authorities became public, Ali bin Musalim was found dead in his Lausanne, Switzerland apartment. That ended that investigation, and because both Saudi Arabia and the Swiss authorities and the Bahamian authorities allegedly dragged their feet in connection with this, and because Ali bin Musalim wound up among the missing, i.e. dead, that investigation has been attenuated. One of the things to be noted here, though, is that the Bank al-Taqwa is very, very well connected. Later on in the broadcast, we're going to touch on the most profound connections between the Bank al-Taqwa and the SAR network. The attorney for Youssef Nada, and the guy who basically was most involved with Bank al-Taqwa's legal work, was a fellow named Per Felici Barchi, who was not only the Swiss lawyer who handled the investments for Silvio Berlusconi, former Prime Minister of Italy and a P2 Lodge member, but Pier Felici Barchi was also a former law partner of Carla Del Ponte, the former top justice official in Switzerland, the equivalent of the Swiss Attorney General. So Bank al-Taqwa is well connected. An article, and frankly a bit of a puff piece at that, but a very revealing puff piece, about the Bahamas branch of the Bank Altaqua, was carried in the Caribbean Net News. This was authored by C.E. Huggins and dated Monday, June 13th of 2005. It's headlined, Blacklisting Fallout, Swiss Blame Bahamian Authorities. Dateline now saw the Bahamas. Swiss authorities recently blamed the Bahamas for the failure of an investigation into the Altaqua Management Organization, now NADA Management Organization. The investigation goes back to September 11th when U.S. authorities discovered that Bin Laden was associated with Altaqua. In fact, they were talking about other things. This is an example of how this article is defending the Bahamas, skipping down. It was because of the account maintained by Ali bin Musalim, the late Ali bin Musalim, that this investigation took place. By the way, as we looked at in For the Record 513, Ali bin Musalim had previously worked in conjunction with the Hunt brothers, the powerful right-wing Hunt brothers of Texas, in connection with their attempt at cornering the silver market of the Bahamas branch. According to Altaqua's Bahamian attorney and representative Sean Hanna, Youssef Nada, Altaqua's founder, had decided that their Bahamian operations did not warrant the added expense of a physical presence and had decided to wind up the operation. The central bank had given a grace period for such banks to make the necessary arrangements. And it goes on to say basically the Swiss blame the Bahamian authorities for not pursuing these connections. Now, that article was from June 13th of 2005. This is an article from January 3rd of 2006. Holiday deaths. Sean had among the key Bahamians who died in this most recent holiday season. Sean Hanna was called to the bar at the young age of 22, but he had the distinction of coming from a family of lawyers with his father, Arthur D. Hanna, at the head, his brother Dion and sister Glennis Hanna Martin, Minister of Transport and Aviation. Sean Hanna was a relatively quiet and unobtrusive individual and for the most part kept out of the limelight, although he was a passionate person with a keen legal mind who stood up for what he believed in. He also was obviously a relative to the Bahamian power structure. And Sean Hanna died. It doesn't mention the cause of death, but Sean Hanna has deceased, and apparently at a relatively early age. So he will not be around to disclose anything further about the Bank Altaqua. And again, as we looked at it among other programs, For the Record 456, Nazi and Fascist Connections to September 11th, the Bank Altaqua has many, many, many links to other things, Italian fascism, German and American neo-Nazis. As we've looked at in some programs, there are evidentiary tributaries running in connection with the royal family of Liechtenstein. And obviously among the many powerful interests that lap upon the shores of the island Altaqua, are the power political elite of the Bahamas, Sean Hanna, the late Sean Hanna, being one of those. Please take advantage of the remarkable and growing information that's available on the Spitfire website and linked websites. WFMU is archiving the For the Record shows. Spitfire features the last four For the Record shows for download only on Real Audio and MP3. There are lectures and now miscellaneous archive show M42 for download for free on the Spitfire website. An entire library of anti-fascist books for download for free. And all kinds of linked websites as well. A blog site. Each program is turned into a long article-length description. So please take advantage, as a growing number of you are. Please take advantage of the Spitfire website and linked websites. It's an invaluable research resource. This concludes For the Record program number 583, Side 1, Update on Islamic Fascism. This has been recorded on January 28th of 2007. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.